I think that's Radio Havana sounding off there. Yep, definitely Radio Havana. And from Radio Havana, the Venezuelan Foreign Ministry has rejected the U.S. government's unbelievable comments on Venezuela that show its absolute bias towards the violent and extremist sectors of Venezuelan politics, which favor the use of terrorism to overthrow a popular and democratic government. The ministry was referring to a statement issued by President Ronald Rump, who said that if the Maduro regime imposes its constituent assembly on July 30th, the United States will take strong and swift economic actions. Trump's threats were repeated by U.S. State Department, which released a statement calling on the government of Venezuela to abandon the proposed National Constituent Assembly. The thin democratic veil of the Venezuelan opposition has fallen, and it reveals the brutal interventionist force of the U.S. government, which has been behind the violence suffered by the Venezuelan people over the last 4 months. It is not the first time that we denounce and confront threats as ludicrous as those contained in this unbelievable document. That's a quote from the Foreign Ministry of Venezuela. They also called on the people of the world to defend sovereignty, self-determination, and independence. Quoting again, the National Constituent Assembly will be elected by the direct, universal, and secret ballot of all Venezuelans under the authority of the National Electoral Council as contemplated in our legal framework. It is an act of political sovereignty of the Republic. Nothing and no one can stop it. The Constituent Assembly will go on. End quote. The threats come after record high numbers turned out to participate in the historic dry run vote for the ANC, which is aimed at easing tensions and creating a more representative constitution. Despite the mass show of public support, the event was largely ignored as international leaders continue to criticize the Venezuelan government and demand immediate elections. White House spokesman Sean Spicer called on Miraflores to cancel the National Constituent Assembly, what I was referring to as ANC, and convene what he called free and fair elections. And speaking for myself, of course, it's extremely ironic for the U.S. to call for free and fair elections in Venezuela after participating in the coup attempt in 2002, in which Hugo Chavez was whisked off to an island by pro-U.S. generals. And, sort of typical U.S. coup attempt was put into place with the local pro-U.S., pro-oil industry, U.S. oil industry, that is, and local TV owners putting themselves into power only to be shoved back out by the people. But returning to the article from Radio Havana, Cuba, EU diplomat Federica Mogherini likewise urged President Nicolas Maduro to suspend plans to convene the Constituent Assembly, noting that the move would be an important gesture towards de-escalating tensions. This message was echoed by Spanish President Mariano Rajoy and the Italian Prime Minister Paolo Gentiloni, who penned an opinion piece for the Spanish newspaper El Mundo criticizing the Venezuelan government. The Organization of American States Secretary General Luis Almagro chimed in Tuesday, saying that if the Constituent Assembly went ahead, it would be inappropriate, and he demanded that the constitutional process be canceled. Joining the interventionist attacks, Colombia and Chile reportedly filed a lawsuit at the International Criminal Court in The Hague against Venezuelan President Maduro on charges of alleged torture and illegal imprisonment. Maduro defended Venezuela's dignity and sovereignty against these threats Monday, telling Rajoy to get your nose out of Venezuela. We're reminding the insolent Mogherini, that's their quote, insolent, that, quote, Venezuela is a free sovereign country, not a colony of Europe. Quoting Maduro again, for Mariano Rajoy, the opposition plebiscite is a legal referendum in relation to the state and to the Constitution, but the referendum of the people of Catalonia to decide their status before the Spanish state is not legal. End quote. In defense of the assembly, Maduro recounted the Battle of Ayacucho in Peru, a concluding military victory of the Latin American Revolutionary Wars when the forces of Grand Marshal Antonio José de Sucre decisively forced the Spanish Empire to surrender and end its reign over South America. Quoting Maduro again, ours is a constituent assembly for independence, sovereignty, and national dignity. Let Europe say what it wants to say. We do not care what Europe says. We care about this land, our dignity, the land of the liberators of the Americas, end quote. The dry run vote was held Sunday in anticipation of the official July 30th vote for the National Constituent Assembly, or ANC. Given the surge of right-wing protest violence The president of the CNE said Sunday that the voting exercise was particularly important to ensure that voters can exercise their right to vote in safe conditions. She explained that part of the exercise was to identify those localities within the municipalities where the safety of voters could be threatened during the electoral event. She was quoted saying, "We continue to evaluate measures that protect the lives and physical safety of voters because there have been expressions of fear about going to vote. We assure people that we will continue to look for measures so that they can come out and vote peacefully on voting day," end quote. While there were some reports of violence, the dry run vote was largely carried out in a festive mood. Some 496 polling centers were authorized in all the municipalities of the country, 55 of which functioned as pilot centers, according to the National Electoral Council. Nearly 1,900 voting machines were deployed in the dry run to help voters learn how to use the machines. Quoting Jorge Rodriguez, head of the Zamora 200 Campaign Command, it is clear that the majority of Venezuelans want peace, dialogue, and a future. Today, a new machine has been born that will push forward a new history, a new dawn, end quote. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. There was a symbolic referendum called by the right-wing opposition, which asked people to vote whether they want a constituent assembly or not, and they claimed, skipping ahead, that 7 million Venezuelans had participated, 98% of whom opposed the assembly, but short of the 11 million they had hoped for in a country of just under 20 million eligible voters. Ending the Radio Havana article, meanwhile, the opposition has called for several days of actions, even calling for a parallel illegal government in its efforts to overthrow the Bolivarian Revolution. Now, that was a rather lengthy Radio Havana article, and I went through the whole thing, because I've noticed that the American left is not supporting Venezuela. And I've noticed, of course, as many people have, that the Maduro government has made some key mistakes. However, they are committed to popular sovereignty. They are committed to a democratic process, and they have been walking their talk, putting their money where their mouth is, however you want to phrase that. And this constituent assembly is part of that, and has a history in Venezuela. And I was hoping to get Gregory Wilpert of VenezuelaAnalysis.com on the line, but I wasn't able to get hold of him. But he wrote an article in VenezuelaAnalysis.com, which I would like to quote. He wrote, "Venezuela is heading towards an increasingly dangerous situation in which open civil war could become a real possibility. So far, over 100 people have been killed as a result of street protests. Most of these deaths," he writes, "are the fault of protesters themselves to the extent that we know the cause. The possibility of civil war becomes more likely as long as the international media obscure who is responsible for the violence, and as long as the international left remains on the sidelines in this conflict and fails to show solidarity with the Bolivarian socialist movement in Venezuela." He writes, "If the international left receives its news about Venezuela primarily from the international media, it is understandable why it is being so quiet. After all, this mainstream media consistently fails to report who is instigating the violence in this conflict. For example, a follower of CNN or the New York Times would not know that of the 103 who have been killed as a result of the street protest, 27 were the direct or indirect result of the protesters themselves. Another 14 were the result of lootings in one prominent case because looters set fire to a store and ended up getting engulfed in the flames themselves. 14 deaths are attributable to the actions of state authorities, where in almost all cases those responsible have been charged, and 44 are still under investigation or in dispute. This is according to data from the Office of the Attorney General, which itself has recently become pro-opposition." And again, speaking for myself, when you hear opposition in this context, actually talking about pro-U.S., pro-CIA, pro-oil industry, pro-wealthy protesters who've been taken to the streets and trying to make the scene look like something that they cooked up themselves, something that is a popular movement. And nothing could be further from the truth. This is a context in which the U.S. has very blatantly intervened and has been caught out. There's a movie that you can see on YouTube about this. And you can pull up YouTube, and if you use the search bar, if you put in Venezuela and then "the revolution will not be televised," you can see it for free. It's in two different versions, at least. There's one that's cut up into 10 parts because it used to be that YouTube only had short segments available. Pardon me. And another one shows the full movie. The revolution will not be televised. Of course, you have to put in Venezuela first, otherwise you get references to the genius Gil Scott-Heron, where the phrase comes from. And in that movie, you can see, for example, that, well, if people remember the 2002 uprising at all, not an uprising, but a coup by the U.S., one of the things they think they remember is that pro-Chavez protesters were shooting into the crowd with pistols. And you can see a video of you know, something like a third or greater proportion of Venezuelans carry handguns, and you can see these people shooting. But if you see a wider angle, which actually shows the whole scene of the bridge where those people were shooting, they were not shooting into a crowd at all. They were shooting into an empty street, trying to counter a sniper who had been shooting into the crowd. In other words, the opposite of what people think they know is true. It was not leftists who shot into a crowd. It was leftists who pulled their pistols and tried to bring down a sniper. And that sniper was pro-US, pro-CIA, pro-oil industry. In other words, the opposition, the protester in this context. And I think that's what's so confusing. But Wilpert goes on and addresses that as well. So I'll just read a bit more of the article. If you have comments, the number to call, 503-231-8187. Oh, I think Per is on the air. Hello, Per, are you there?
Hey, good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. How are you? What's up?
Pretty good. You know, I saw that movie, and I thought the most wonderful scene was, remember, the when the coup plotters, they've taken over the palace, and they're celebrating, you know, and all of a sudden they look out the window, and they realize that they're surrounded. And then, oh boy.
it's really quite a movie, because it wasn't, no one set out to make that movie. That was the that was an Irish film crew that was there to just record the goings on, mm-hmm. and didn't realize they were going to find themselves in the middle of a U.S. Instigated coup. And so they were there right. to record the whole thing and made the movie afterwards.
Well, one thing I wanted to bring up was, I think, you know, the biggest mistake that Venezuela made was, I've read this several times, that they import 70% of their food. And so at a time when the price of oil was high, you know, it was cheaper to do that than grow your own. But what it does, it puts you at the mercy of the international oil market. Now, price of oil is very low, and so that's the root of Venezuela's problems. They did have land reform. They took over a lot of corporate farms, but they apparently did not do enough to get the people to grow their own food. They do have programs doing that, but it was not enough, because you see they're still importing 70%,
which we can see now as a tactical mistake. But you know, the oil price really did hit them very hard, because Venezuelan oil is very thick crude, mm-hmm. and it just doesn't sell. I mean, it sells at a lower price anyway, mm-hmm. But they were still making money hand over fist while oil prices were high. But when it's low, no one, and especially while the U.S. is cranking out this radium-contaminated fracked oil at a cheap price, no one wants to buy their stuff, and so they are really suffering. And every mistake that they make tactically has been great. I mean, this is the real problem. Everything has been magnified by the fact that they're just not getting in cash.
Well, and you know, that makes them vulnerable to U.S. sabotage. So I would say that any country has got to be able to feed itself. You know, they call it food sovereignty, and it's very important. You can't depend on the market, because the market can be manipulated by the powers that be. So I hope that Venezuela has time to change that. I've read accounts that they are working on it, but I don't know how it's going.
Well, I'm glad that you called in about this, and I've just decided to spend some time on this, because there's just so little information that comes out about Venezuela. And I think that Wilpert is correct in writing in VenezuelaAnalysis.com that the American left needs to kind of wake up, because, mm-hmm. you know, sure, they made mistakes, and so what?
Well, there was some article in Jacobin magazine that was kind of, oh, I don't know, it was kind of chintzy. You know, I mean, I think a lot of American leftists, I'm not sure what their problem is. Maybe they don't deal in reality. They think in abstractions or something, and they sort of, oh, I don't know. They criticize Venezuela for the wrong reasons, as far as I can tell.
Well, you know, speaking as a leftist, I'm encouraged that they have gone as far as they have, and that they, you know, there are sincere socialists in the government who want to distribute not just wealth but political power, and that's the sort of revolution that I've always supported.
Well, let's hope they succeed.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just want to call in and bring up that point.
Okay, and you're going to be calling in coming weeks, right?
Yeah, I'll be I'll be doing a little segment on I think August 3rd. I'll be down there.
Okay, all right then.
And a little preview. It's going to be about a fellow in Newport, Rhode Island named Timmy the Woodhooker.
Timmy the Woodhooker. Okay. Well,
he was a junk dealer right in the middle of Bellevue Avenue, among all the mansions and palatial manors and everything. And it's quite a story.
All right, then. We'll look forward to that.
Okay. See you later.
Thanks for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Pardon me, with your comments and questions. I am not coughing because of the wood smoke, as far as I know. But there has been wood smoke in Oregon, and there have been fires, and it's the sort of thing that's covered on KBOO News. You can hear that. We have KBOO News at noon. We have Democracy Now! At 7 and at 4 p.m., and we have KBOO News at 5 p.m., and you'll want to tune in for that. This is your radio station. It depends on your support. That's why we can stay honest about things like boycott, divestment, and sanctions. That's why you can hear in depth, in detail about Venezuela, because we don't depend on corporations. We don't, we've been taking money from the corporation for public broadcasting, but we're very leery of that because of the history. It's been given to us and taken away in the past, and we've survived, even though many stations called it a death sentence, and it actually was a death sentence for certain stations across the United States when it was yanked during the, the second Bush administration. We depend on your donations, which is why you should pull up KBOO.fm if you're not on there already, and click on the donate button. I think you'll find that interesting, too. We have our 50th anniversary coming up, and we'll have some interesting swag for that. I think you'll be, that you will enjoy what we will do, and of course, we're going to party down. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Also unknown to most consumers of the international media would be that opposition protesters detonated a bomb in the heart of Caracas on July 11th. Now, let me once again, because of the context here in the United States, let me clarify it again, even though I'm reading an article to clarify. When I say opposition protesters, I'm talking about pro-U.S. People who are basically being traitors to their own country by supporting the U.S. after it attempted coup attempts there. Attempted coup attempts? After it ran a coup in 2002. Opposition, these right-wing opposition protesters detonated a bomb in the heart of Caracas on July 11th, wounding 7 National Guard soldiers. People don't know that a building belonging to the Supreme Court was burned by opposition protesters on June 12th, or that opposition protesters attacked a maternity hospital on May 17th of this year. In other words, he writes, it is possible that much of the international left has been misled about the violence in Venezuela into thinking that the government is the only one responsible, that President Maduro has declared himself to be a dictator for life, when he actually confirmed that presidential elections scheduled for late 2018 will proceed as planned, or that all dissent is being punished with prison when a major opposition leader, Leopoldo Lopez, who was partly responsible for the post-election violence in 2014, was just released from prison and now under house arrest. So if this is the reason for the silence of Venezuela, then the left should be ashamed for not having read its own critiques of the mainstream media. And he writes, all of the foregoing does not contradict that there are plenty of places where one might criticize the Maduro government for having made mistakes with regard to how it has handled the current situation, both economically and politically. However, criticisms of which He writes, I've made several myself. Do not justify taking either a neutral or a pro-opposition stance in this momentous conflict. As the South African anti-apartheid activist Desmond Tutu once said, if you're neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. Perhaps the Venezuelan case is also confusing to outsiders because President Maduro is in power and the opposition is not. It could thus be difficult to see the opposition as being an oppressor. However, for an internationalist left, it should not be so confusing. After all, the opposition in Venezuela receives significant support not only from private business, but also from the U.S. government, the international right, and transnational capital. And I suppose this is where I should say again that it's worthwhile pulling up YouTube and spending an hour watching the film, pull up Venezuela on the search bar at YouTube, and then the revolution will not be televised. And you can see that this is just the U.S. coup being done over again. Returning to the article, perhaps progressives feel that the Maduro government has lost all democratic legitimacy, and this is why they cannot support it. According to the mainstream media coverage, Maduro canceled regional elections scheduled for December 2016, prevented the recall referendum from happening, and neutralized the National Assembly. So let's take a brief look at each of these claims one by one. First, regional elections, state governments and state governors and mayors, were indeed supposed to take place in late 2016, but the National Electoral Council postponed them with an argument that political parties needed to re-register first. Leaving aside the validity of this argument, the council rescheduled the elections recently for December of this year. This postponement of a scheduled election is not unprecedented in Venezuela because it happened before back in 2004 when local elections were postponed for a full year. Back then, at the height of President Chavez's power, hardly anyone objected. As for the recall referendum, it was well known that it would take approximately 10 months to organize between its initiation and its culmination. However, the opposition initiated the process in April 2016, far too late for the referendum to take place in 2016, as they wanted, because if it takes place in 2017, there would be no new presidential election, according to the Constitution, and the vice president takes over for the remainder of the term. Finally, with regard to the disqualification of the National Assembly, this is another self-inflicted wound on the part of the opposition. That is, even though the opposition had won 109 out of 167 seats outright, they insisted on swearing in three opposition members whose election was in dispute because of fraud claims. As a result, the Supreme Court ruled that until these three members are removed, most decisions of the National Assembly would not be valid. In other words, none of the arguments against the democratic legitimacy of the Maduro government hold much water. More than that, polls repeatedly indicate that even though Maduro is fairly unpopular, a majority of Venezuelans want him to finish his term in office, which expires in January 2019. As a matter of fact, Maduro's popularity is not as low as several other conservative residents in Latin America at the moment, such as that of Mexico's Enrique Peña Nieto, which is 17% in March, Brazil's Michel Temer, 7% in June, or Colombia's Juan Manuel Santos, 14% in June. Compare these to Nicolas Maduro's 24% approval rating in March of this year. So he writes, now that we have addressed the possible reasons why the international left has been reluctant to show solidarity with the Maduro government and the Bolivarian socialist movement, we need to examine what neutrality in this situation would end up meaning. In other words, what allowing the opposition to come to power via an illegal and violent transition would mean. First and foremost, their coming to power would almost certainly mean that all Chavistas, whether they currently support President Maduro or not, will become targets for persecution. Although it was a long time ago, many Chavistas have not forgotten that the Caracazo, when in February 1989, then-President Carlos Andrés Pérez meted out retaliation on poor neighborhoods for protesting against his government and wantonly killed somewhere between 400 and 1,000 people. More recently, during the short-lived coup against President Chavez in April 2002, the current opposition showed that it was more than willing to unleash reprisals against Chavistas. Most do not know this, but during the two-day coup regime, over 60 Chavistas were killed in Venezuela. This figure does not include the 19 killed in the lead-up to the coup on both sides of the political divide. The post-election violence of April 2013 left 7 dead, and the Huarimbas of February to April 2014 left 43 dead. Although the dead in each of these cases represented a mix of opposition supporters, Chavistas, and non-involved bystanders, in almost all of these cases, the majority belonged to the Chavista side of the political divide. Now, during the most recent wave of Huarimbas, there have been several incidents where a Chavista was too close to an opposition protest were chased and killed because protesters recognized them to be a Chavista in some way. In other words, the danger that Chavez supporters, that socialists, will be persecuted more generally if opposition should take over government is very real. Even though the opposition includes reasonable individuals who would not support such a persecution, the current leadership of the opposition has nothing to rein in the fascist tendencies within its own rank. If anything, they have encouraged these tendencies. Second, even though the opposition has not published a concrete plan for what it intends to do once in government, which is also one of the reasons why the opposition remains almost as unpopular among the general population as the government, individual statements by opposition leaders indicate that they would immediately proceed to implement a neoliberal economic program along the lines of President Temer in Brazil or Mauricio Macri in Argentina. They might succeed in reducing inflation and shortages this way, but at the expense of eliminating subsidies and social programs for the poor across the board. Also, they would roll back all of the policies supporting communal councils and communes that have been a cornerstone of participatory democracy in the Bolivarian Revolution. So, he writes, instead of silence, neutrality, or indecision from the international left in the current conflict in Venezuela, what is needed is active solidarity with the Bolivarian socialist movement. Such solidarity means vehemently opposing all efforts to overthrow the government of President Maduro during his current presidential term in office. Aside from the patent illegality that the Maduro government's overthrow would represent, it would also literally be a deadly blow to Venezuela's socialist movement and to the legacy of President Chavez. The international left does not even need to take a position on whether the proposed constitutional assembly or negotiations with the opposition is the best way to resolve the current crisis. That is really up to Venezuelans to decide. Opposing intervention and disseminating information on what is actually happening in Venezuela, though, are two things where non-Venezuelans can play a constructive role. So you've been listening to Press Watch once again. The main news items are that the State Court of Appeals, the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals has scotched Portland's decision to limit the expansion of fossil fuel infrastructure in Portland. And Oregon Senator Ron Wyden has co-signed on legislation, is a co-sponsor of legislation designed to suppress and to criminalize the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. And I would like to state once again that I do expect to be the first person arrested and fined under this law, because I do believe that the boycott, divestment, and sanctions is a just movement. And it's worth looking up on a search engine. So you've been listening to Press Watch, and you can hear KBOO on 90.7 FM in Cascadia, other frequencies in the greater Bayou region, and you can hear us at kboo.fm. Oh, and at the last moment, I think Jenka is on the phone.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
I just wanted to add about the 2002 coup. And first of all, I hope that leftists can recognize that just because someone is in the opposition doesn't mean that they are necessarily worthy of support. I mean, look at the Contras and the Cuban counter-revolutionaries and everything that has been experienced in Central America. And I hope that people would have a little bit deeper political analysis and be able to see that just because someone is in the opposition doesn't necessarily make them an ally. But in 2002, there was a protest outside of the Cuban embassy, and that was part of the coup, and it was put on all of the international media, and especially in the U.S., that here is the Cuban connection with the Chavez government, and people are opposed to it. Well, it came out when you examine video footage of that protest. It was not a lot of people, and it was all heads of oil companies and the corporate media in Venezuela, which is very much embedded with the oil companies, the privatized ones anyway, and this small group or small cabal of corporate media that was bringing about that coup and a major part of that coup and their family members.
Well, thanks for calling in with that. I appreciate that. And with that, I think that we're out of time. And so you've been listening to Press Watch. Coming up at 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, Jake Vermas welcomes Portland author Omar El-Akkad in his new novel, American War, a story that asks what might happen if America were to turn its deadliest weapons against itself in a second civil war. KBOO.FM going out to you, where you can donate to us, and via the World Wide Web on KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
And good morning. It is KBOO Portland, your community radio station, at 2 minutes before 10 o'clock. Coming up on your Thursday morning at 10:15, we've got Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 today, it's Between the Covers. Your host, Jake Vermas, welcomes Portland author Omar El-Akkad, and his new novel, American War, a story that asks what might happen if America were to turn its deadliest weapons against itself in a second civil war. That's all coming up this morning after we hear from Air Cascadia. Chris Andre is in with headlines, interviews, and commentary coming right up. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. This month, the Finance Committee will meet Monday, July 24th at 4:30 p.m.